Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. The People's Republic of China in a bad patch for economic genius. The miracle of these last decades is now in question. Why? COVID-19 is an explanation. So are decisions made by the Chinese Communist Party over these decades about how to grow quickly, how to attract foreign investment, how to lead the world in economic values come the middle of this century. Joseph Sternberg is a member of the editorial board of the Wall Street Journal. He writes political economics column. He's based in London. He was many years in Hong Kong observing the People's Republic of China on its miracle run that ended somewhat unexpectedly with COVID-19 and what is often called an old-fashioned property bubble. Joe, a very good evening to you. Thank you for this. Xi Jinping is presenting his case to the American people and to the Europeans and other investor class. Come back to China. Invest in China. We read routinely now that money, that foreign money, overseas investment, is fleeing China. This has two drivers, if I understand. One is the economy's on a downturn and the GDP is disappointing. But two, they have a property bubble and they have unemployment to accompany it. In your measure of your column, you ask the question, can China recover? Does it have the tools to recover? Does Xi Jinping see what's necessary to happen in order to recover? Good evening to you, Joe.
Hey, John. Yeah, I mean, a lot of what I think is going to shape China in 2024 and the rest of the world's economic relationship with China is going to concern what Xi Jinping has actually been up to, because it's been the case for a couple years now that the economic growth has been slowing. The property market, which at times accounted for about a third of annual output, has been contracting, and this has been the result of deliberate policy moves from Beijing. And the question that's really coming into focus now is, what is Beijing trying to accomplish? Because if all of this has been an effort to shift China out of its old government-led fixed asset investment model, very over-dependent, unhealthily reliant on property investment, then that would probably be very good for the economy. It would be good for the Chinese middle class and for foreign companies investing in China, because it would mean that they are shifting to a more sustained, plausible, viable economic development model moving forward. So even if the GDP growth is a little slower, it would be better GDP growth than the wasteful white elephant projects they've had before. But the alternative option, which I'm concerned is a bit more likely, is this has all actually been part of a strategy to try to increase the Communist Party's and the state's grip on the economy, to chase out some of the private entrepreneurship that was so important to the success story in China up to now. And if this version were true, it would mean that Beijing is prepared to accept slower economic growth, not because the quality of that economic growth will be better or fueled by more productive private investment, but because that is a price that they are willing to pay to increase the state control of the economy. And unfortunately, I think that there is growing evidence that that second option is the thing that's actually going on right now.
Over these last weeks, I've learned this version of the property bubble, that the central banking in Beijing and that the Communist Party encouraged their apparatchiks in the municipalities, all the cities and provinces of China, to borrow against the property that they possessed in their area, to borrow against it, also to build on that property, because this would encourage, it would guarantee that there would be foreign money flowing in, that people would congregate to their cities, that there would be prosperity for all. That did happen. but it happened in very few cities, Shanghai being one of them, Beijing being another one. It did not happen in all of the provinces that are impractical and not connected very well, or just there are too many of them that built too many imitations of Paris or imitations of Venice. And now that they can't find people to live in their towers, either they're crumbling or they're tearing them down, and the property developers have gone bankrupt or are near to. But also when they appeal to the central government that told them to borrow money, they're told, you're on your own, we can't take care of you, and whoever signed those documents is on the hook for it. This leaves the municipalities with no way out. Does that story sound reasonable to you, Joe, as to what's happening?
I think that is a big part of what's going on right now. I mean, the issue here is something called a local government financing vehicle, which proliferated like, you know, mushrooms or kudzu across China over the past few decades. The gimmick here was the local, you know, provincial or municipal governments could use borrowing against the value of land that the governments owned and were going to sell off over time to private developers. They could use that kind of credit activity as an alternate way of raising revenues without having to impose taxes. And as with so many things of this sort, it worked brilliantly as long as property prices were always going up, because that meant that the debt service would never be an issue and the governments would get all of their interest payments and then be able to meet their own outgoing obligations. And what is starting to happen as the property market softens is that this model is breaking down, and you have a growing number of these local government, basically, think of them as local government hedge funds, where the thing that they've been investing in is property and various property-related debt. And a growing number of those are running into problems, and that raises the prospect that one consequence of this property slowdown is that China's local governments are both going to have to raise taxes to meet their needs for things like social spending or building new schools and hospitals and that sort of thing, at the same time that they're also going to have to use new tax revenue to bail out the investment funds that had been funding the government before.
The property bubble is one problem. The other problem is the question of the slowdown in manufacturing, the unemployment numbers that no longer are trustworthy. They don't give us unemployment numbers of the young people. And surprisingly, large numbers of young Chinese nationals are showing up at the American border, making the very difficult trek all the way from China to Ecuador to America. That's a level of unemployment. But I want to come to the other point you make in your column that sounds extremely threatening for the world going forward, is that this is all on purpose, that the Chinese Communist Party means to take back the power that was flowing into the hands of entrepreneurs, those private developers, manufacturers with independent contracts, investment from overseas that endorsed Chinese growth, but endorsed it with profits flowing to the hands of capitalists. And in other words, is this slowdown a product of the Chinese Communist Party saying, wait a minute, we're going back to command economy when we're the boss and you do what we say, from each according to his need, that old proverb. Now, you indicate that that might be possible. What could tell us that is happening or is not happening going forward, Joe?
Well, I think the signs that we're seeing that this is what's going on is that Beijing has not missed any opportunities to try to consolidate more economic power in its own hands. So, I mean, one of the stories that's been unfolding for the past few years is the steady growth of state-owned enterprises as a share of the economy. You're even seeing this in the property market, where one important development is that Xi Jinping is taking advantage of the financial troubles that the government policy has created for private sector development companies to absorb a lot of their more productive assets into the hands of state-owned developers. And so you almost begin to suspect that this has been part of the strategy all along to try to reabsorb some of the more viable parts of the property market into government hands at the same time that you try to deal with some of the other negative consequences of the property bubble that they had had. And I think that this is an important point for foreign investors to keep in mind, because there do seem to be some factions within Beijing that at times are eager to encourage more foreign investment again because they understand that they need it. But I think that that will not be happening in a context where Beijing is actually committed to encouraging or fostering a productive private sector entrepreneurial economy. Quite the opposite. Those investors will be stepping into an economy where the party and the state apparatus are going to continue to be very interested in consolidating control over time.
I read in the Wall Street Journal report about China that China and the chips wars, the chips competition between the U.S. and Taiwan and China, that China's now constructing 18 fabs at once. The only entity that could do that is the central government. That suggests that there's no trust whatsoever for private enterprise in building the high-end demand for the future. Those chips, not just the frontline chips, but the ordinary chips go into all the products that they're going to be making, like their EV cars. Is this evidence, if this is accurate, and I read it in the journal, I only know what I read in the journal, if this is accurate, is this evidence that there is a plan and it's to take control of the most productive and most sought-after parts of the economy, and there will be no foreign control of our territory?
I think it's fair to guess that that is the plan, and I think it's important to understand what the longer-term consequences for the Chinese economy are going to be, because, I mean, as uncomfortable as the Communist Party is with the entrepreneurial private sector that had evolved in China over the past four decades, that was also responsible for a lot of the impressive economic growth that we saw over those decades and for lifting hundreds of millions of people out of poverty and into the Chinese middle class. And so I think that they are at a point now where that continued economic development is in conflict with a lot of the political goals of the party. And the bad news for the Chinese people as much as for anyone else is that right now politics seems to be winning.
And reshoring, friendshoring, nearshoring, all those terms about shoring, that is a product of the exit of overseas investment. Is that logical? In other words, it isn't even geopolitical. It's that overseas investment seeks confidence in the supply chain, and that's no longer something that you can have with China, a confidence.
Yes, I mean, I think that is certainly a very big part of the story. We have tended to focus on geopolitical risks in supply chains, and particularly the risk that there might be a war started by Beijing and the Taiwan Strait. But I think that a bunch of these other policy risks within the Chinese economy also do seem to be weighing increasingly on investors' minds. And I think it's something that you can't really get away with and is, I suspect, going to start showing up more and more in a lot of the investment data and also in China's economic growth data.
You asked the question, which way is it going? Do you have an informed guess, Joe, as to which way it's going? Because on the one hand is prosperity for a billion people. On the other hand, we know that the communist command economy does not work. We have that example in the Soviet Union. China has that example. Is that so? But that doesn't bother Xi. Is that your measure?
Yeah, my guess is that it's going to get worse before it gets better, and the reason for that is that the party increasingly is going to prioritize its political aims over what it used to view as its main political purpose, which was delivering economic growth. I mean, they seem to be thinking about these issues very differently now, and I think that foreign investors in particular should understand that.
If you were watching for one thing to tell you why that is going to become a surveillance state, in other words, what's happening in Xinjiang against the Uyghurs is going to happen to everybody, what would you be watching for? Shanghai? Banking to flee, banks to close. What is a tell, Joe?
Well, I think actually a big tell is what has been happening in Hong Kong, where they had a major global financial center, which was operating on very free market principles, but under mainland Chinese sovereignty, but with the autonomous alternative political and economic system, and were ultimately not able to tolerate that kind of difference. And so I think that that suggests that even when they have a model that is relatively limited and they know it is working, they seem to be losing their tolerance for that degree of freedom.
Joseph Sternberg is a member of the editorial board of the Wall Street Journal. He writes a political economics column for the Wall Street Journal editorial page. He's based in London. We're going to turn to life in London. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3-bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort-style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.